Good evening, everybody. As you can see, tonight we're going to be discussing what could either be considered the beginning of Maggid or actually a section that may be an introduction to Maggid. It's not found in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah discusses the beginning of Maggid being the pouring of the second cup, and then, of course, the recitation of the four questions, the Manishtana. So we're going to be discussing Halach Ma'anya and different aspects of it. You see that I've subtitled the Shir tonight, Bread of the Poor, but a Heritage of Wealth. I owe my father this title, I guess, in the spirit of Pesach, which obviously emphasizes the transmission from parents to children and even to grandchildren, as the Pasuk says, Vehodatim levanecha, v'livnei vanecha, you should tell your children and your grandchildren. My father was once reflecting on his father's childhood. I merited having many Pesach Sedarim with my paternal grandfather, Zichron Levracha, who I was able to experience this with, a special tradition. So he mentioned that they were, from a monetary standpoint, which was absolutely true, extremely poor, but they were very wealthy when it came to tradition. Tradition both in terms of learning, but as we'll see tonight, also in terms of concern for people who had even less, which was hard to imagine. But that's going to be one of the themes that we discuss tonight, is the interface between poverty on the one hand and dignity. Very often we think of people who are impoverished as lacking in dignity, but that often can be a very significant prejudice. And I want to discuss a little bit about how this introduction to Maggid, or maybe the first part of the Maggid section, actually deals with the interface of poverty and dignity. Of the three major symbols of Pesach, we know that Rabbi Gamliel is quoted in the Mishnah as saying that a person has to say three things to explain them, to fulfill their obligation in terms of the mitzvah of telling the story of the Exodus, Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So if you think about the three basic images that Rabbi Gamliel talks about, the Pesach, the Matzah, and the Maror, Pesach and Maror have very clear identities. The Pesach, of course, relates to the fact that God either had compassion, that's one of the meanings of the term Pesach, is Chemla, had compassion on the Jewish people, or literally passed over, that's how we get the title Passover, passed over the Jewish homes and spared them. So the Pesach, the Korban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, is certainly an image that has to do with the redemption of the Jewish people, deals with that final phase of our sojourn in Egypt, and in fact, really not so much with our sojourn there, but our extraction or redemption from Egypt. That's the Pesach. The Maror, on the other hand, is precisely in the opposite direction. It means bitter. It has to do with the bitterness that we suffered in terms of our slavery in Egypt. But if I were to ask you, what is the matzah? Well, I will ask you. Is the matzah associated with our redemption, or is the matzah associated with our suffering? Definitely yes. That's the Yogi Berra. When you come to a fork in the road, you have to take it. So you're very good. Okay, what do you mean by that? Yes?
Well, it's the bread which our forefathers ate in Egypt, and it's the bread that we ate upon redemption.
Right, so the matzah is very complex. On the one hand, it's what we call the lechem oni. It's the bread of our affliction. As is described by one of the great Rishonim, the Abu Draham, the Egyptians specifically fed us matzah as opposed to regular bread, which would have chametz in it, because if you want to get the maximum amount of work out of somebody in terms of calories, without having to invest too much money in them, you feed them matzah. So on the one hand, it really called to mind our degradation, our slavery, our bondage. On the other hand, we know that matzah has completely the opposite connotation, because matzah has to do with the fact of ki v'chipazon yatzasa meretz Mitzrayim, that we left Egypt in a state of utter haste. We didn't have the time for the bread to rise. So matzah actually is a dialectic. Matzah could either be the bread that calls to mind our affliction, or matzah could at the same time be the bread that calls to mind the speed with which we were redeemed. And that will certainly be at issue tonight as we discuss the Halach Ma'anya. So we're going to read this text in a second, and I want to highlight a number of questions that we'll hopefully address in the context of our presentation. As we can already see from the language, the Halach Ma'anya is in Aramaic, and that certainly requires attention. Why would it be in Aramaic where the rest of the Haggadah is in Hebrew, number one. Number two, one of the themes that we'll talk about, kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, that anybody who's hungry should come and eat. You know, like, why exactly are we saying this? So we certainly know that hachnasas orchem, that welcoming guests, is a value that is hardly rivaled in Judaism. It, of course, goes back to our patriarch and our matriarch, to Avram and Sarah, and how they organized their lives. In fact, this expression, kol dichvin, anybody who is hungry, yesi v'yechol, literally should come and eat, that's the Aramaic translated into the English, is originally from the Talmud, but nothing to do with Pesach. The Gemara in Masech Tanis on Daf Chaf tells the story of one of the sages of the Talmud, the Amoraim Rav Huna, who used to say every single day when he would sit down to eat, anybody who's hungry, please come and join me, with these words, kol dichvin yesi v'yechol. So why are we giving special emphasis to this on Pesach? Like, hachnasas orchem, welcoming guests, is always a mitzvah, okay? So that would be the second question. The third question is the most technical, but we'll see, it's the linchpin to the entire analysis, is the next line of kol ditzrich, anybody who needs, yesei should come, v'yifsach, and join us for the Korban Pesach, for eating the Korban Pesach. Now, can anybody tell me what problem there might be with that? It sounds like a wonderful offer. But what do we know about the halachos of the Korban Pesach? This is actually a Mishnah in Masech Tzvachim. Dr. Gertler, go ahead.
We're pointed to a specific animal before it was slaughtered.
Right. So unlike, you know, when it comes to shul events where we say, you know, you have to register, you don't really have to register. I mean, it's helpful if you register. The Korban Pesach, you have to, well, it's true. We don't really turn anybody away. The Korban Pesach, you had to register in advance. You actually had to sign up for a specific animal while the animal was still alive. That's called the minoy. The Mishnah in Masech Tzvachim, that we actually say as part of the davening every morning in the Korbanos, that Pesach is eino ne'achal ela leminuyav. It has to be eaten by those who are registered. So you can't actually do this. Kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach. You can't invite somebody on the night of the 15th, once the animal had already theoretically been slaughtered, and say, join us for the Korban Pesach. That would be like a critical violation of the rules of Korban Pesach. So how exactly, you know, are we going to have this line? One of the Rishonim, the Rid, Rabbeinu Yeshayahu of Trani, one of the great Italian Rishonim, was so bothered by this that he took it out of his version of Halach Ma'anya. He didn't say this line. He says this is obviously not true. Now, others tried to explain it in other ways, that v'yifsach, maybe this is a reference to the afikomen. V'yifsach, maybe this is a reference to just the leil ha-pesach, join us for the night. But it seems awfully strange because, again, it would appear to be a violation. So just to, again, summarize the questions that we've laid out so far, and then we'll go to a fourth question in just a moment. Why the Aramaic? Why the special emphasis on hachnasas orchim? It's the line that we use in the Halach Ma'ani is actually was said by Rav Huna every single day of the year when he would eat. It wasn't specific to Pesach. What do we mean that we're inviting people over to join in the Korban Pesach? If they weren't signed up in advance, they're not allowed to join us. You really have to be registered for the Korban Pesach. So how exactly does this line make sense? Kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach, the position of the Rid, again, simply to take out this line. And finally, if you look down at the bottom of the page, you'll see that the version of the Rambam actually differs slightly from the version that we have. And I'd like to try to understand how the Rambam understood Halach Ma'anya, perhaps slightly differently, and what that can teach us about what it is we're trying to do overall. So if you go down the version of the Rambam added in the introductory words, Bibihilu, in a state of haste, Yitza'anu or Yatsanu Mimitzrayim. We left Egypt. So the Rambam seems to have gotten this from a comment of Unkus, who of course translated the Chumash into the Aramaic, on the Pasuk which says, Ki v'chipazon yatsasa meretz Mitzrayim. The translation of chipazon in Aramaic is bibihilu, in a state of haste, even to the point of confusion. To be nivhal is to be in a state of shock or confusion. So while we left Egypt, we were in a state of confusion, a state of haste. And then the Rambam had halach ma'anya. This is the poor man's bread, the bread of the poor. De'achlu av hasana, that our forefathers ate, denafku, who went out of me'ara de Mitzrayim. If you look at our version, now back on the top, Halach ma'anya, we don't have the introductory words, bibihilu yatsanu mimitzrayim. We don't have that in a state of haste or confusion we left Egypt. It just goes straight to halach ma'anya da'achlu avhasana bi'ara dimitzrayim. In other words, the bread that we ate while we were in Egypt, not as we were leaving Egypt. So what exactly did the Rambam change the version for? How did he understand what it was that was going on? So again, we have these four questions. It just came out to four questions. Had there been more questions, I would have added them. It wasn't deliberate that way. But let's now just read the simple text of Halach Ma'anya, and then we'll begin to address these questions, hopefully one by one, and build up something of a portrait that I hope will resonate and be meaningful as we approach Pesach. So the text again says, Halach Ma'anya, we literally uncover the matzahs for this part, right? This is the bread of the poor, da'achlu av hasana, that our ancestors ate, be'ara de Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt. Kol dichvin, all those who are hungry, yesei ve'echol, let them come and eat. Kol ditzrich, anybody who is in need, yesei, let them come, ve'yifsach, and join us for the Korban Pesach. Hashta hacha, now we are here. Where's here? We'll explain. Lishana haba, next year, be'ara de Yisrael. We will be in the land of Israel. So whenever Halach Ma'anya was authored, where do you know the Jewish people were not? They couldn't have been in Israel, right? That has to be clear, because otherwise you wouldn't say, now we're here, next year we'll be in Israel. So it could be Madagascar, it could be Birobidzhan, it could be Argentina, it could be Uganda, wherever else there was a plan to put the Jewish people at some point in history, but it wasn't the land of Israel. It could have been Tinek, but it wasn't in Israel, okay? That's for sure. It's not a text that would have emerged from the land of Israel, okay? Hashda avdei, now we are avadim, we are slaves, we are not sovereign. L'shana haba b'nei chorin, we will be liberated. So as is pointed out by many of the Rishonim who commented on the Haggadah, and the Haggadah, again, was analyzed almost like a Talmudic text by so many of the great medieval scholars by the Rishonim, so they point out that Halach Ma'anya was a much later addition to the Haggadah. The Haggadah wasn't written in one generation. It was a compilation of many generations. Okay, there's plenty of it that comes from the Mishnah. There's plenty of it that comes from the Medrash Halacha. This was one of the latest sections that was added when the Jewish people were already living in Babylonia. And of course, their spoken language there was Aramaic. And that's why it's a text that is in Aramaic. And that would explain the first question. Now, in terms of the second question that we presented, yes, it's true that Hachnasas Orchim is a very important mitzvah year-round, but there is a special quality to this mitzvah when it comes to Pesach. We know, for example, that the very first Korban Pesach, when Moshe was introducing the laws to the Jewish people, he discussed the idea that the Korban Pesach wasn't supposed to be left over. You really are not supposed to leave over lo sosiru imenu ad boker, and if there would be meat left over, it actually had to be burned in a special procedure after the passage of Yontif. So how could you avoid the Korban Pesach being left over? So what Moshe advised the Jewish people was that the home should get together, families should get together in what we call a chabura, in one unit, in one group, to experience the holiday together. So that, of course, reflects one degree of getting together with other people to eat the Korban Pesach. But it doesn't necessarily relate. You could have two families that are relatively well-to-do getting together. But what about, the special quality or the special valence of inviting those who would otherwise do without on Pesach? So I actually sent a message out to the shul today. So there's a very beautiful tradition that we have called Ma'os Chitin, or referred to in the Gemara and the Yerushalmi as Kimcha de Pescha, the flour associated with Pesach, where the Torah actually says, not matzos tochal, that you should eat matzah, but matzos ye'achel shivas hayamim, that matzos should be eaten for all 7 days. So this is interpreted by the Vilna Gaon to be a reference to the idea that not only on Pesach are we responsible to make sure that we eat matzah and we participate in the holiday, but we have a special mitzvah of ensuring that every single member of the Jewish people who wants to be included, is included in the celebration of the holiday. And so there's a special quality of tzedakah in advance of Pesach, of making sure that people who would otherwise do without will not do without. And if it comes to it, certainly to make sure that people who would otherwise not have a place for the Seder are invited over for the Seder. So this is, again, has biblical roots. It's a minhag that we have of raising the money in advance, but the truth is it's a minhag that has biblical roots based on the pasuk that I just mentioned, matzos yachel, that matzos, not only we should personally eat, but that we should cause them to be eaten by others. Kol dichvin yese ve'echol has a special meaning on the holiday of Pesach to make sure that everybody could participate. Now you might say, can we take that one step further? Like, why should that be? Why should there be such an emphasis on including everybody? So I'd like to hopefully come back to that, you know, as we continue to go ahead in the text and analyze it. Why is it that the Torah would say that there's a special quality of ensuring that everybody can participate when it comes to the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of reliving the Exodus every year? Okay, Kol Ditzrich, as we noted, Yesei Vivsach, that's the most troubling line. We'll come back to it. Hashta Hacha, we are here now. Lashana Haba Be'aradi Yisrael. Next year we'll be in Israel. Hashta Avdei, we are now slaves. Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin. But next year we will be liberated. So that is the basic text. Again, it was a later introduction. It's written in Aramaic. Certainly there's a special mitzvah of making sure that everybody can participate in Pesach relative to even Shabbos or other holidays. But we still have to wonder about this third line, Kol Ditzrich, anybody who needs will come and participate in the Korban Pesach. So I'd like to suggest something about that line in light of the Rambam's changes. So we noted before that the Rambam added in a few introductory words to the Halach Ma'anya that may change the orientation of the entire text. Okay, because if you just start with the words, this is the Lach Ma'anya, this is the Lechem Oni. Remember we mentioned before that matzah really has two different dimensions. There's a dimension of matzah that relates to our enslavement, and there's a dimension of matzah that relates to our redemption. So if you start with the words, halach ma'anya, this is the bread of the affliction, this is the bread of the poor, which aspect are you emphasizing? Certainly the affliction, right? That it reminds us of our time when we were enslaved, halach ma'anya, te'achla vasana, be'ara demitzrayim. But if you think about what the Rambam did by adding those introductory words, Bibihilu Yatsanu Mimitzrayim, which is the translation, the Aramaic translation of Kivichi Pazon Yatsasam Eretz Mitzrayim, what was the Rambam doing? He wasn't just adding words, but what was he demonstrating here? Go ahead. He's emphasizing a dimension of matzah that doesn't have to do with our oppression or our enslavement, but which dimension of matzah? The fact that it's also the bread of our redemption. Ki v'chi pazon yatzasam eretz Yisrael, that we left Egypt in haste, is actually the explanation for why we have matzah and not chametz, because we didn't have time for the bread to rise. And in fact, that also explains the second change that the Rambam made, namely, he doesn't say, de'achu av hasana bi'ara de Mitzrayim, that our ancestors ate in Egypt, but what does he say? De'achu av hasana Dinafku, that went out of the land of Egypt. So the way that Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav, put it was, he thought the Rambam was really trying to emphasize both dimensions. He wasn't denying that this was the Lechem Oni, the bread of affliction, but he was introducing that other element of matzah, the fact that matzah, as we say later in the Haggadah, al shem shenigalu, that we were redeemed. As the Pasuk says, ugos matzos ki lo chametz, that we were not able to have the time. It all came so quickly when it came that the bread didn't have time to rise. So I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach, say that the Rambam wasn't necessarily emphasizing both dimensions. It's true that he still refers to it as the Lechem Oni. And the Rambam, it seems to me, seems to be showing something a little bit more subtle, which is the idea that Lechem Oni, the bread that for hundreds of years, if you went back to Egypt and you showed a Hebrew slave matzah for the 200 years that we were in Egypt, it would have always had one meaning: suffering, bondage, oppression, affliction. And then if you would show either that Hebrew slave or his or her son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, whatever generation it was that was redeemed, that same piece of matzah, so overnight, that matzah, that symbolism, would have taken on a completely different meaning. Does everybody see that? That something which you could associate for years and decades and generations as something completely negative can itself be transformed in light of new experiences and new circumstances. So I'd have to give the following example. Let's say you had this a guy, and he's driving like this, you know, totally beat up car, and it breaks down like, you know, every three blocks, and it's the only thing that he could possibly afford. And, you know, every time he sees the car, he's reminded of, you know, how much he hates his job and how poorly he gets paid and why he hates his boss. And every time he sees this car, this is the only car he can afford, and, you know, this is what he's stuck with. So he drives his car, but it's a constant reminder to him of everything that's wrong in his life. But then this car breaks down, as it always does one time, and all of a sudden, you know, the woman of his dreams appears, you know, as he's trying to repair the car. This is obviously, you know, made up story. So, and then she has exactly the right part to, you know, repair his car, and they fall in love and they get married. And of course, you know, he's able to get to his job, so he makes a, you know, a tremendous amount of money. And then, of course, that car, which was for years, maybe decades, however long you want to, you know, in this story, poetic license, since we made it up, we can make this however long we want it to be, that for 17 years he drove, you know, as a single guy with a broken down car and a job that he hated. Now this car turns into, for him, overnight, a symbol of his redemption. So I think what the Rambam is trying to show here is it was the Lechem Oni, but then it was transformed in terms of its symbolism, because Ki v'chipazon yatzasa me'eretz Yisrael. And that was the beauty of God insisting that we have matzah even as we left. It wasn't saying, okay, you had matzah, you know, for so long, but now you're going to have, you know, steak or whatever it is. God's going to say, no, I'm going to take that matzah that you associate with the worst of your suffering, with the very depths of all of your travails, and I'm going to show you how I have the capacity to take that very symbol, an object of your affliction, of your suffering, and I can transform it in a minute into something that you never imagined it could be, into the symbol of your redemption. That's really the story of matzah. I think that's the story that the Rambam's telling. It's the Lechem Oni, but b'behilu yatzanu mimitzrayim, the matzah was completely transformed. Okay. Now, if we take that premise, then I think we can come back and understand some very important things. We integrate the transformation of the matzah with our invitation to the poor person. Why is that significant? We could have had two different things. We could have introduced the matzah, and then we could have had a separate invitation to the poor people. But what are we effectively saying? Just like this matzah was completely transformed, that for so long this matzah was only a symbol of suffering, of oppression, of slavery, of persecution, and then the matzah was changed in a heartbeat. Kol dichvin, if you're amongst those who are hungry, so right now, things can be looking very bleak. But the truth of the matter is that things can turn around in a heartbeat. And how does the halach ma'anya go on and continue? It says, yeah, hashtahacha, we're here now in Babylonia, but we believe that we have a future in Israel. Hashtahavde, we may be enslaved now, we may not be sovereign now, but l'shana haba, but next year, everything can be different. In other words, the Jewish people, impoverished, oppressed in Bavel, looked at the matzah and saw that the transformation of the matzah could actually be their story one day. And it's exactly the message that we give to those who need this message of transformation the most, that things may be unimaginably difficult right now, but like the matzah was a symbol of terrible suffering and oppression, and then all of a sudden in a night, everything changed, so too the story can change for human beings as well. And so we package together our invitation to those who need the message of the Exodus the most, the idea that we can be brought out from terrible bondage and suffering into the heights, as we discussed last week, of liberation and exaltation. So we integrate that with the story of the matzah, with our invitation to the poor, and all of these formulations of transformation, going from here to Israel, going from slavery to liberation. I think all of that explains the basic structure of halach ma'anya and the contribution of the Rambam. But there's still that one thorny question that we have not yet answered. And I want to just focus here. We noted that the one difficult line, so difficult that no less an authority than the Rid, Tosfos Rid, simply took out this line, is Kol Ditzrich Yesei V'Yifsach, that anybody who needs, come and join us for the Korban Pesach. And he said, how could that possibly be? Don't you have to pre-register? So he said, you know, there are all kinds of other ways of getting around it. Maybe it just means for the night of the Pesach, doesn't actually mean for the Korban Pesach. That certainly makes sense, since this was a text that was authored in Bavel. In Bavel, remember, this was when they were no longer offering the Korban Pesach. But I thought maybe we could suggest something a little bit different. Now, it sort of builds off the premise that we were developing just a moment ago. The ability to take something that you look at as a complete negative and then begin to see that that itself can be a positive, just like we did with the matzah. So the fact that, of course, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jewish people were exiled from their land in 70 CE, over the next number of generations, we had the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, things became very bad in the land of Israel, and basically the Jewish community shifted its center of gravity away from the land of Israel to Bavel, and then from Bavel, you know, to North Africa, and the founding of the European Jewish community, however that happened, a big discussion amongst the historians. So we were in a period of exile in Bavel, obviously when this text was being written. And we could look at the fact that we don't have a Korban Pesach as a sign, again, of our degradation, right? We used to be sovereign. We used to have a temple where you could bring a Korban Pesach and celebrate, so to speak, the real way. The fact that we don't have that is something that we should be ashamed of or embarrassed about. Certainly not the kind of thing that you'd want to put into the very introduction of Magid, Kol Ditzrich Yesei V'Yisach, as if highlighting the fact that we don't have a Korban Pesach. So it seems to me that this is a beautiful example of taking what should be a pure negative and looking at the positive side of it. As I said a moment ago, in reality, back when we had a Korban Pesach, having Korban Pesach was a wonderful thing. It allowed you to celebrate the Seder in accordance with all the proper mitzvos, including eating the Korban Pesach. And when you have a Korban Pesach, even eating Maror is a Torah-level commandment today. When we have Maror, it's only rabbinic. But there's one downside to having a Korban Pesach, as I said. Because if you have a Korban Pesach, that means that you can't invite anybody over at the last minute because they're not going to be able to eat the Korban Pesach with you. That's one of the rules of this Korban, is that you have to be pre-registered. So now in the absence of the Korban Pesach, which is not objectively, you know, when you look at the big picture, a positive thing, but look at the beauty of the wealth of our heritage. Just how elegant the response is. Okay, we said, now we don't have a Korban Pesach anymore. Overall, that's a negative thing. But look at the bright side, because now what can we do that we could have never done before when we had the Korban Pesach? Now, if there's anybody who's left without a meal, even on the night of the Seder itself, we can still invite them over. So look at the plasticity, the elasticity, the adaptability of our tradition. That, okay, we lost one thing, we lost the ability to have this Korban, but we gained in a different area because we were able to expand our chesed to other people. Not just, you know, raising money beforehand and making sure that everybody got pre-assigned to Korban Pesach. But now if there's somebody stuck, you know, the night of the Seder and Shul doesn't have any place to go, we can easily, we should, we must invite them over. Kol Ditzrich Yesei V'Yifsach, join us on this night of Pesach. And this is the wealth of our tradition. That we took something which was a complete negative, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the absence of the Korban Pesach, our exile, and we said, well, wait a minute, this does yield a new opportunity. This yields an opportunity for us to do even more chesed. So I wouldn't take out this line like the Rid did. I would say, keep it in. Kol Ditzrich Yesei V'Yifsach, because it reflects this indomitable spirit, which is at the core of our national story, to be able to say, if matzah can go from being a sign of degradation for decades and centuries to a sign of redemption, and that can be our story also. We can go from being slaves to free people. People who are hungry can go to being people who are liberated, being b'nei chorin. So the absence of the Korban Pesach, which in its own right is, again, a very upsetting thing, and it reflects, you know, the overall state of the Jewish people, we can turn that around in its own right and use that as an opportunity to expand in terms of our chesed. And so I think that by tying together the story of what Hashem orchestrated with the matzah, how Hashem transformed the symbolism of the matzah from one of suffering to one of liberation, so we extend that message to ourselves by saying, hey, we don't have the Korban Pesach, but we do have chesed. Chesed goes with us wherever we are, and we can always expand our chesed opportunities. And in a certain sense, the very absence of the Korban Pesach allows us to do even more intensive chesed, given the fact that we can now invite people over. But what we really do is we hold out that message to those people in our community, as we say, kol dichvin, who are hungry, yesei v'yechol. We say that things can be transformed quicker than we know. Hashtahacha, we are not just geographically here now, but even emotionally or psychologically, we may be in a place that is very difficult. But l'shana haba, next year, we can be geographically and beyond, metaphorically, in a very different place. Hashta avde, we may feel completely ensnared, entrapped now in whatever it is that we're dealing with, but l'shana haba could be the next year, the year after that, at some point in the future, we look forward, b'nei chorin, and that's the introductory line. Then we go in, and of course, with the manishtana, we begin the whole story, but we formulate it in terms of the Jewish experience. So again, there are periods in our history when indeed we were impoverished, when indeed we were oppressed, but the wealth of our heritage is something that never abandoned us. And as I say, the flexibility of our heritage, perhaps lose one thing, you lose the Korban Pesach, but you gain a greater measure, a greater midah of chesed. This all reflects the incredible tradition, as we spoke about last week, that we endeavor to pass on the night of Pesach, pass on to the next generation and to the generation after that. Pesach night is obviously a time where we think not just in terms of our generation and our spot along the historical continuum, but we think across the generations. We think in a longitudinal way. Bechol dor vador, we say, Om dimaleinu l'chal oseinu. We think back to generations before us, and we dare to envision generations that will follow us. It's part of that continuum that we begin with the halach ma'anya by reflecting on the ancestors who came before us, who were oppressed in Egypt, and it ends, of course, with a very glorious vision of the future, l'shana haba be'aradi Yisrael, l'shana haba b'nei chorin, with the liberation of the Jewish people, something that we have in a way that even our great-grandparents couldn't have imagined, begun to experience in our own time with the flourishing of a sovereign Jewish state in the land of Israel, continue hopefully to experience that going forward. But again, this message of transformation, a message that started with the bread itself, just as the matzah could go from being a symbol of oppression and degradation to a symbol of redemption, that can become our own story as well.